From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, we go to the other side with Dr. John Lermer, learning from the light. Now, don't panic, because this happened 2,300 years ago. A huge wave crashed into New York City in that region, dumping sediment and shells across Long Island and New Jersey and casting wood debris far up the Hudson River. The scenario proposed by scientists is undergoing further examination to verify radiocarbon dates and to rule out other causes of this upheaval. Deposits from more than 200 cores in New York and New Jersey indicate that some sort of violent force swept the northeast coastal region in 300 BC. The origin of such a tsunami is under debate. An undersea landslide, they say, is the most likely source. But there's one research group out there that has proposed that an asteroid impacted and provided that trigger. Why is this a big story? Because it could happen again. Iraq's government ruled out allowing U.S. combat troops to remain in Iraqi cities after the June 30th deadline for their withdrawal, despite concern that Iraqi forces cannot cope with the security challenge following a resurgence of bombings in recent weeks. Asking U.S. forces to stay in the cities, including volatile Mosul in the north, would be embarrassing for Iraq's prime minister, who has staked his political future on claims that the country has turned the corner in the war against Sunni and Shiite extremists. The departure of heavily armed combat troops from bases inside the cities is important psychologically to many Iraqis who are eager to regain control of their country after 6 years of war and U.S. military occupation. So they are basically telling us it's time to go home. We'll see what happens. Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives, however, will seek passage in coming weeks of $94.2 billion and more emergency money for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Iran's supreme leader publicly rebuked its president over his removal of a top official. Now, that was a rare show of discontent with the hardline Mahmoud Ahmadinejad by the country's most powerful figure, Khamenei. The rebuke issued in the press comes at a time when Iranians are watching carefully for any sign as to whether Khamenei's support of Ahmadinejad is weakening as the president faces a tough battle for a second term in June 12th elections. Khamenei's backing is important for any presidential candidate to win. This June election is very important. We'll tell you why in a moment with Jerome Corsi as he comes and joins us in just a few minutes. Masked assailants with grenades and automatic weapons attacked an engagement ceremony in southeast Turkey, killing 45 people. They were just there to have a good time. Two girls survived after the bodies of slain friends fell on top of them during the onslaught. The nighttime attack occurred near the city of Mardin. It's where my late grandmother was born, by the way. Some media outlets reported that a blood feud among families had led to the killings in a region where tribal ties and rivalries sometimes eclipse the power of the state. As we have been reporting for some time now about the ammunition shortage across this country, now the story has been picked up by CNN, reporting that gun shops across the country are reporting a run on ammunition, a phenomenon apparently driven, they say, by fear that the Obama administration will increase taxes on bullets or enact new gun control measures so people are stockpiling. In the last 2 months, it's gotten very, very difficult to find ammunition, says Richard Taylor, who manages the firing line, a gun shop and shooting range in the Denver, Colorado area. Said there are a lot of rumors floating around that the present government would like to increase taxes on ammunition. And he says, I think people have panicked and they're buying everything they can. A larger share of banks has made it more difficult for you to obtain home mortgages over the last 3 months, even as demand has grown, according to the Federal Reserve. The Fed's new quarterly survey found that about 50% of the U.S. banks tightened their lending standards on prime mortgages. Now, that's up about 45% in the survey issued in early February. Meanwhile, 65% of the banks said they tightened standards on non-traditional mortgages, such as adjustable rate loans with multiple payment options. That was up from 50% in the last survey. Our economic advisor, Catherine Austin Fitz, on the line with us now. Catherine, this is going to screw up home buying even more, isn't it?
Well, George, when income is falling, it's very hard to persuade banks to lend more money.
Well, that's true. But somebody's got to.
Well, I will say the first thing America needs, the vast majority of new jobs and job formation comes from small business and startup business. What we need to start seeing is a lot more circulation of equity outside of Wall Street, because people don't need more debt. They need equity investment. They need to start new businesses or build up their current businesses.
Stock market went through the roof again today, so there seems to be a perception that things are getting better.
Well,
what's happening?
So sure. We have 8 times more inside sales by directors and officers than purchases. And in fact, insider purchases in April were the skimpiest month since July 1992.
That's interesting. It's almost
like got the insiders selling.
Yeah, they're saying we don't think this is going to work.
They're selling into the you know, I call this a bear market rally. So, you know, what happens is the market goes down is it'll shoot up for a period and then go down again. They call it a bear market rally, and I say this is a bear market rally.
What's happening, Catherine? I see this picture now on this puzzle, even though the pieces are still scattered all over the board.
Uh-huh.
America is losing its companies. It's locally owned or it's nationally owned companies. We're losing them to foreign interests now, and this is just going to multiply it.
Now, you mean we're shipping the jobs and
the capacity
abroad, or we're selling?
The companies themselves are getting bought out
now.
Well,
sure, because if you are countries around the world holding huge amounts of treasury bonds or other fixed income and just dollars, you want to put your money in real things, because we've been watching the monetary authorities all around the world print more and more paper. And so, you know, for 60 years we've all been printing paper, but the real, you know, the land hasn't been increasing in amount. So what you're watching is a shift of investors, and this is a long-term trend, George. This is going to be going on for a long time. They're shifting it into real things. They want their funds in hard assets.
Catherine's website, Solari.com. Catherine, as usual, thank you so much.
Thank you, George.
With swine flu, we've been talking about it, saying that it's not going to be a huge pandemic, right? Well, now the swine flu virus that has sparked fear and precautions worldwide appears to be no more dangerous than the regular flu virus that makes its rounds every year. Who said this? U.S. health officials. The flu has been blamed for now 26 deaths worldwide, not all the others that they said. 25 in Mexico, 1 in the United States. How'd they get that wrong? Maybe they wanted to. An analysis of clinical data indicates that vitamin E and drugs that reduce generalized inflammation may slow the decline of mental and physical abilities in people with Alzheimer's disease over the long term. So take your vitamin E. Pete Seeger, and he's still singing strong at the age of, get this, 90 years old. More than 40 performers turned out to honor the legendary folk singer at a birthday concert at New York's Madison Square Garden Sunday night. The lineup included Bruce Springsteen, Dave Matthews, Emmylou Harris, and John Mellencamp. Seeger opened the show playing a flute solo. Proceeds from the event are going towards preserving and protecting the Hudson River. Pete Seeger going strong at 90 years old. Our feature story at coasttocoastam.com. Take a look at the invisible car. Well, it looks invisible. Sarah Watson is the girl who dreamed up the illusion. You know, they say a picture is worth 1,000 words, so I'm not going to say anything about it anymore. Just go take a look at it, coasttocoastam.com. I'll tell you who's going to say a lot about a lot of things in just a moment. Jerry Corsi joins us as we talk about the situation in the Middle East, world affairs, and how they're going to affect you at home. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, he writes for World Debt Daily. He has written best-selling books. He has toppled presidential candidates. He's Jerry Corsi, but I think he likes me, don't you, Jerry?
Great deal, George. It's always an honor and pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Did I say World Net Daily or did I say World Net Daily?
No, you said. I think you said World Net Daily correctly. Thank you.
Good, good. Sometimes you get those letters reversed.
Oh, I understand. I understand.
My gosh. What's new with you?
Well, I've been very busy writing. My Red Alert newsletter has taken off, and I've been writing with pretty severe concern about the takeovers that we're seeing in the Obama administration over the economy. Both, I'm beginning to call it Government Motors instead of General Motors. Right. And I was very concerned with the Chrysler proposed resettlement, the restructuring last week, when the rights of the secured lend creditors, the secured creditors, were not given equal protection to the junior unsecured creditors, namely the union. I mean, I've got great sympathy for how much the union has suffered with $20 billion being owed to the union pension fund by Chrysler. I mean, that's a severe stress.
Absolutely.
At the same time, with the union being willing to forgive $10 billion of that, which is more than generous, and the union deserves return for that, under bankruptcy law, the secured creditors, especially these non-TARP banks, the creditors, the hedge funds that have not taken any government funds, they'd be crammed down to less than about 29 cents on the dollar of their investment and be made to be at the back of the line with the union rights ahead of them, I think is just not appropriate under bankruptcy law and very detrimental to the future of being able to attract private capital. And the Obama administration wants these same hedge funds to assist in buying the troubled assets off of the bank balance sheets. But yet if the Obama administration is going to demonize the secured creditors for wanting their rights in a bankruptcy upheld, I don't think that's going to be productive to getting private capital, which we need badly in the economy, to come forward.
You know, it's amazing, Jerry. It's both political parties, that the main ones, that have contributed to this stimulus package of giving away money like crazy. Of course, during the President Bush administration, they came up with $700 billion for a bailout, of which he spent $350 billion of it before his term was up. And now President Obama's doing his thing and is getting even more money involved. But both parties are spending like crazy.
No question about it. George, I was very critical, if you'll recall, through the Bush administration of the I'm neither a Democrat or a Republican, as you know, and I've been very critical of the out-of-control spending, both of President Bush, although I have to admit President Obama is making President Bush's spending look like it's on steroids. I mean, this is, now we're talking about trillions of deficit spending as if it was nothing whatsoever.
And it's in 100 days.
Right. I mean, this is frightening. It's clear now, I say the Treasury is going to have to raise $2.5 trillion in debt, Treasury securities, to handle the budget deficit. The Treasury's announced it's now going to raise what looks like $2 trillion. I think before the end of the year, we're going to see the $2.5 trillion figure be correct. And I'm predicting the Treasury will raise $4 trillion next year in securities and debt to finance the Obama administration budget deficits. That would increase our national debt by 65% in 2 years, and I doubt very much that countries like China are going to continue participating in buying our debt at that level.
Now, Jerry, I'm a little confused, and I want you to help me out here. And we got a lot of topics to talk with you about today, especially this election coming up in Iran.
Right.
But, you know, when the Republicans were in office and we went into Iraq, you know how I feel about why we went in there, and I don't think we should have.
Right.
But, you know, Afghanistan, that was a different case, but we didn't do the job there either. And our troops are there battling and doing whatever they can. But anyway, so the Republicans, you know, basically get us into Iraq and we're spending billions of dollars. And I remember when President Bush asked Congress for some money and I said on this program, folks, it's going to be more. It's going to get bigger. And, you know, people said, well, not really. Well, anyways, it hasn't stopped. And the Democrats at the time were jumping up and down. We're spending too much. We got to get out. Da-da-da-da-da. Now the Democrats are in power. And they're spending as much money, if not more, in Afghanistan and Iraq. When does it, and any of the Iraqis want us to leave?
I know the Monday the Congress just voted, Democratic Congress, another $94 billion for the war effort in Iraq and Afghanistan. And again, George, this is one of the areas I'm finding it very hard to tell the difference between President Obama and President Bush.
You can't.
We're going to expand the war in Afghanistan, and the reports coming out of Pakistan are that the Taliban are within 60 miles of the capital in Pakistan.
And they have nukes.
If the Taliban takes over Pakistan, are they going to take over the nuclear arms of Pakistan? I mean, this would be an incredibly frightening scenario. And India would not just sit tight and let the Taliban come in and control Pakistan's nuclear weapons. I mean, we'd have an expanded war in that part of Asia immediately, I think, between India and Pakistan, threat of it at least, if the Taliban did take over Pakistan. And President Obama looks like he's expanding with probes and various assaults into Pakistan. Looks like the war is extending over into Pakistan under President Obama. And, of course, President Obama, I thought, campaigned on ending this war, and now I don't see any sign of it. In fact, the money that was voted by the Democratic Congress, this $94 billion on Monday, did not include any funds for relocating anybody out of Guantanamo. So I guess President Obama said he's going to close Guantanamo, but I don't know where the Gitmo prisoners are going to go, or if the Democratic Congress has any plan to fund them being relocated.
Unless you just let them all go.
I guess let's put them in hotels and let them vote.
Oh my God.
I don't know what we're going to do.
Now, you know, you and I have been talking about the true possibility of Israel and Iran going to war over Iran's nuclear capabilities and continuing effort to build a nuclear power plants throughout their country and maybe nuclear weapons. And we've been looking for the window. We've talked about it before. We just couldn't find the window. What would be the possible date if there was going to be something? Because it just can't keep going on the way it is. I mean, you know, you've got the president of Iran saying that he wants to obliterate Israel. You just can't let it keep festering. So, and nobody really wants war, but I've been looking for the window, and I finally found it today, Jerry. It's this June 12th election. I'm gonna stick my head out here and say that if Ahmadinejad gets reelected on this June 12th election, we could have a war between Israel and Iran. But if he gets defeated, there's going to be more of a pro-Western person in, and I don't think we're going to have a war.
Well, I'm afraid the war is coming either way. But I see your point. I think that the Mousavi, who is the candidate who is opposing Ahmadinejad, Amir Hussein Mousavi, was actually the last prime minister of Iran from 1981 to 1989 before Iran eliminated the position of prime minister. And he is clearly more moderate, more of a reformer, and he would be more disposed to trying to negotiate, I think, some settlements over Iran's nuclear enrichment program. So you have a very valid point, George, in saying that if Mousavi were elected, that would be a movement toward progress in negotiations where Iran might be more reasonable.
And, you know, why am I bringing this up now? Why is this important to someone listening to this program right now in Wichita or in Kansas City or in Sacramento or in New York? What do they care about what's going to happen in Iran? And I'll tell everybody. If you think things are bad now because of the economy in Iraq and Afghanistan, you wait if there's a war in the Middle East. We will go through something we don't want to go through, Jerry Corsi.
Well, I think that's right, George. We saw oil at a high in July of last year at $147 a barrel. I think we'd see oil at $250 a barrel almost immediately.
Yes.
I don't see that there's any way that a war in the Middle East is productive. I've been against it and trying to prevent it since 2005 when I wrote Atomic Iran. What I'm concerned about is I think the Obama administration is tilting very strongly toward the Palestinians and is turning its back on Israel, which is not productive. On Monday...
I think we got to work with both of them.
We have to work with both of them. And the reason it's not productive is that if Israel decides that the Obama administration is not going to support Israel, then Israel is going to come closer to what I've always called the Samson option, which is that Israel is going to decide it has nothing to lose. And if Israel feels it's abandoned and nothing to lose, it's more dangerous because the probabilities increase that Israel would attack Iran. And that's what I'm trying to prevent.
Jerry, we're going to take phone calls with you. Wide-ranging calls, the economy, situation in the Middle East, next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Dr. John Lermer joins us as we talk about the afterlife. Hey, by the way, have you subscribed to Streamlink yet? For just pennies a day, you can get podcasting and downloads. It's a great deal. Just go to coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, let's take phone calls with Jerry Corsi on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We've got Dr. Jerry Corsi with us and your phone calls as well. Jerry, they're lining up for us before we go. Any more words of wisdom from you, Jerry, before we go to the calls?
Well, the late great USA, when I said that the mergers were coming together with Mexico and Canada and the United States, I see two points now which support the arguments I made there. Number one, President Obama has said that he will not renegotiate NAFTA. So all the campaign promises about creating jobs in the United States and renegotiating NAFTA, those are out the window. And secondly, I was astounded with this hysteria over swine flu and coming from Mexico, that the Obama administration insisted we wouldn't close the border. I mean, what more proof do we need? I guess if we were really worried as U.S. health security was our first objective, I would think that we would close the border in a health epidemic immediately. So I think that we're well along the way, and I expect to see a bill introduced that will go back to the comprehensive immigration reform debate. I think we'll have that debate all over again, possibly even in 2009, with new legislation being introduced by President Obama.
Okay, to the phones we go, east of the Rockies. Jonathan, get us started in Atlanta. Hey, Jonathan.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Dr. Corsi. George, I'd like to cite a quote from the former supreme leader of Iran. And he said this often to his people. He once said that Islam makes it incumbent for every adult male to prepare themselves for the conquest of every country in the world so that the writ of Islam will be obeyed. Now, that was Ayatollah Khomeini, the supreme leader now of Iran, wouldn't you agree, Dr. Corsi, is a dictator. And this is a parliamentary, theocratic dictatorship. And he is the one who has the final say-so on every law and who gets elected. And he's far from anything but a figurehead. If anything, Ahmadinejad is the figurehead, and he does his bidding at the behest of the supreme leader. Now, the fact that he's in power right now and he's spouting his radicalism all over the world, talking about a world without America, talking about taking out Israel, talking about converting the world to Islam, you know, is apparent that his agenda is anything but negotiations and compliance or trying to do anything that seems sensible in the sense of relations to other countries in the world.
Well, I think George and I would both agree with you that that Iran is a religious dictatorship. Ayatollah Khamenei does rule, does decide the laws. And I've always believed even the elections within Iran are really not fair elections. I'm quite confident that the winner is whomever Ayatollah Khamenei wants to win, regardless of the votes that are cast. It's a strange system in Iran. It's not like the votes are irrelevant, but the outcomes always come to be outcomes that the supreme leader wants. I'd also agree it's a very dangerous regime, especially when the Shiites believe in this return of the Mahdi, the lost figure, the young boy went down the well in 976 AD or whatever year and is going to come back out of the well when there's an apocalypse and will cause Shiite Islam to triumph worldwide. Ahmadinejad has avowed belief in that radical messianic view. So it's very difficult to see how we're going to reason with this type of a radical extreme regime. And I think you're pointing out the dangers to Israel that continue as long as Ahmadinejad and Ayatollah Khomeini continue with this radical rhetoric.
Jerry, at what point does India get involved in the Pakistani situation? Because they will not let this happen.
I agree, George. It was very important, I thought, at the last presidential press conference on the anniversary of the 100 days in office, when President Obama said that he believed that the nukes and Pakistan were secure. Now, he was pressed on that, and I don't know why President Obama feels so confident that the nukes in Pakistan are secure. I don't feel that way if the Taliban takes over. And I'm quite sure that if India sees the Taliban taking over, I mean, I've always felt that even within the secret police forces, the ISI of the Pakistani government, there are forces that support the Taliban. So I think it's a very dangerous situation. I don't think India is just going to sit by quietly and watch radicals in Pakistan take over the government.
Not at all. Let's go to Sacramento. Danny, west of the Rockies. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, George. I just have a question. You know how in 2006, 2007, gas prices was almost like $5. They were just maybe a cent under $5.
Yep.
How much would it be, you know, like you said, if we do go into, you know, if we do take on Iran? And what about this Iranian Jew and him being the Antichrist and Bible prophecy? Because he's really making some headlines, this guy is.
Well, first of all, Jerry, will we be able to get gasoline?
Well, if there is a war with Iran, it's unpredictable between Israel and Iran. And I think one of the first things that Iran would do would be to disrupt the oil coming through the Straits of Hormuz. So we could have an equivalent of what was the 1970s oil embargo by OPEC, in that there could be a stoppage of oil coming from the Middle East, which would affect oil flows worldwide.
And it would be interesting to see what Hugo Chavez does then in Venezuela.
Well, in fact, again, Ahmadinejad just canceled a trip to Brazil that was going to happen this week. He's going to stay home with the election in June, but he was planning to go this week to Ecuador and Venezuela as well. So I'm sure Hugo Chavez in Venezuela would support Iran and would probably cut off oil supplies to the United States, or that's a possibility if there were an Israeli-Iran war.
Very possible. And what about the return of the Mahdi? Remember that?
Well, yes. I mean, the Mahdi is the whole. This is the figure, the lost imam, the young boy that 946 A.D. went down the well and is in hiding. And Ahmadinejad believes that it'll take in. This is the Shiite messianic view. It will take an apocalypse, and when the apocalypse occurs, the Mahdi will come out of the well, and Shiite Islam will triumph worldwide. It's a very dangerous belief for the head of a state or a religion to have when a theocracy is in control of the government and this radical view, messianic view, calling for an apocalypse in a country that is pursuing nuclear technology that President Obama now openly says is a nuclear weapons program.
We now have Elizabeth in Illinois. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to speak to you both.
Mm-hmm.
I had an idea that the reason we went in to overcome Saddam Hussein was to basically destabilize the Muslim region to give Israel more of a balance over there. And they are God's people, and we do need to support them. And a lot of people think that it's for oil, but I think there were a lot of much more reasons that we went there. And I think we should all be very, very afraid of the Muslims because they want us to either become their religion or die. And that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Okay, but not all of them.
Well, George, I've continued to say, and I'd like people to understand that war in the Middle East is always the problem. It's never the solution. Remember when Prime Minister Rabin was alive, and I had the opportunity to be close to him and his wife, even when she was in the United States. At the end of his life, he came to the conclusion that for everyone killed in the Middle East, on either side, it perpetuated another generation of violence. We have to break through into finding solutions where the future generations, Muslim and Jewish and Christian and whatever religion, can live in peace, not only in the Middle East, but around the world. So I'm very much opposed to war, and I don't see war as a solution in the Middle East.
I think it's the politicians that seem getting us into this trouble all the time, Jerry. I was talking to an Iranian tonight who came to this country. He owns his own valet company now, and he's got the concessions all over the place. His family, still in Iran, I mean, they love America.
Well,
I mean, nobody wants war.
If you go into the Bible, the book of Ezra, it was the Persian people who, at the end of the Babylonian captivity, gave the Jews the wherewithal to build the second temple. There have always been millions of Jews who have lived in Iran. The Persian people and the Jews have gotten along for centuries.
Until the politicians got involved.
Until the politicians and this radical group of clerics who have hijacked Iran and have taken it in this radical direction, which is not the direction. There are millions of Iranians in the United States, a million or more in California. They're very successful, very productive people. And the Persian culture is one of the centuries-old, I think really 4,000-year-old, most rich cultures on the face of the earth.
Okay, let's go to Santa Clarita, California. Hello, David. You're up with us.
Yeah, hey, George. Hey, I ain't nobody but just a cowboy truck driver. I would blow the horn for you. I'm sitting in a truck stop.
That's good enough for us, David. Don't worry.
All right. Hey, I ain't no Ronald Reagan Republican. I'm more of a Thomas Jefferson Republican.
Okay.
And this guy is boo-hooing for the unions. And I wish you would question him on more why these other companies such as Walmart, Toyota, Honda, that don't have unions, they're doing just fine without these unions. And but none of that really matters to me because, hey, the shortage of ammunition, that's a simple answer. People like me, we're buying the ammunition and we're ready for Big Brother to come down, New World Order, Obama, Bush, they're all the same. It don't matter. We're ready.
Do you really think the New World Order is going to try to take over?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've been waiting this for years, all this swine flu. That's just a dry run for the superbug coming along. We're ready. Hey, and this guy, this doctor, I don't know him. He seems he's giving some misinformation about the unions and this and that, playing everybody against each other. They're all the same. And we're ready. We're willing. Like I said, I'm just a dumb truck driver, but I can count. I can put two to two together, and I'm ready.
All right, let's get Jerry's reaction to this.
Well, I've always been a union supporter. I mean, I come from a union family. My point on the unions was a limited one. I was saying that while the unions were suffering in Chrysler, in the bankruptcy, the secured creditors are going to have a legal right that will be ahead of the junior lenders who are unsecured, and that's what the union is. I'm not, though, denying that the union is suffering tremendously under this reorganization of Chrysler and will suffer under the reorganization of GM. I think that's very unfortunate. In terms of, if you take a look at my late great USA, I've argued against this whole New World Order, which I think is taking over. My next book, America for Sale, is going to make that clear. And Walmart, you know, if we allow U.S. multinational corporations to take the position that they can find, you know, a slave somewhere or near slave somewhere in the world to do your job cheaper than you, well, no American job is safe, and we've lost millions of jobs, I believe, to that globalist thinking.
You know, Jerry, they all screwed up. You know, I was born in a huge union town, Detroit.
Right.
And, you know, I was there with the UAW. I knew Teamster folks. You know, I was the last reporter to be with Jimmy Hoffa before he disappeared back in 1975. I was walking him to his car.
Really?
After we had done a show with him. And he was telling me about why he wanted to come back and take over the union presidency again,
yes,
in spite of the fact that they cut a deal that he would not be able to do that. That's what got him out of jail when Nixon pardoned him.
Right.
And, you know, so I was raised in this union town. They both screwed up. I mean, the unions kept taking what they could get, and the companies kept giving what they thought they could afford, and nobody ever thought that the day would come where we'd have this huge international series of workers and everything else cutting American prices and cutting American jobs. They didn't anticipate that, and they trapped themselves.
Well, I think you're right, George, and you'll know how hard I fought against the Mexican truck drivers. I've sided with both the Teamsters and the independent owner-operators to say that these safety issues are very important. I attended the hearing where Mary Peters, who was Secretary of Transportation under George Bush, said that the Mexican truck drivers were being allowed to take their English proficiency exams in Spanish. If they could identify what the road sign said and explain them in Spanish, the Department of Transportation said that the Mexican truck drivers could speak proficiently in English. I mean, it was ridiculous. And I think we're going to have, under the Obama administration, another reintroduction of the Mexican trucking demonstration project as part of this North American integration that continues to go on.
Next up, let's go to Ohio. Hello, Scott. Your turn.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen.
Hi.
My question is for in regards to, I don't know, is the Obama administration that naive to believe for a moment that Iran's interested in discussing anything with them? I mean, I don't understand when someone says, look, we're not interested in letting Israel exist. They need to be wiped off the face of the earth. And he said it time and time again. Why is it necessary for us to say, okay, we need to sit down at a table with you, you know? And, I mean, I don't understand why that would be possible and how the Obama administration thinks it's to Iran's advantage to sit down. And if, in fact, war does happen, and I think it's coming one way or another, it doesn't matter who's in office, you know, the hardline administration that currently exists in Israel is not going to, you know, look the other way the next round, you know? They're going to make a decision, and that's it. And we're stuck in the middle. Our troops are sitting right in the middle of all this.
So true.
And that's why I just need your thoughts about it.
So true. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, I've been very concerned, and my concern is, yes, it's going to be very difficult to negotiate with Iran. It's been tried since 1979. The Clinton administration tried. President Bush tried. I'm watching reports coming out of Israel on Monday that Rahm Emanuel has met now evidently with the American-Israel Political Action Committee, 300 major donors, and has said that Israel's got to agree to this two-state solution and make progress in negotiation with the Palestinians before the Obama administration will stand behind stopping Iran's nuclear program as a condition. Now, we're going to see a major test when Prime Minister Netanyahu comes to the United States later this month in May.
And look for that June 12th date. Okay, let's find out who wins that Iranian election.
It's, you know, what's happening is that if Israel does not feel that the United States is going to stand by Israel to force concessions from Iran, Israel is going to come to the conclusion they have nothing to lose. And that's the dangerous point when a war will come. And Israel's already asked the Bush administration for flyover rights to attack Iran. So it's coming. I continue to say it's the worst possible solution. I'm not for war. And the caller who made the point of our troops being in harm's way, that's got to be emphasized. We have troops. There'll be missile attacks from Iran and counter in retaliation. And there could be thousands of U.S. troops that die.
Now, if you had a country that said, look, we need nuclear power, okay? We need it. You have it. We need it.
Give it to them.
You can monitor us. You can come in. You can do whatever you want, but we need it. You can come and get our disposable depleted uranium. We don't care. But we need power, and we don't have a lot of water here, so we can't get it from hydro plants. We need power. What's wrong with that? Nothing.
Nothing. In fact, Iran is a signatory to the nuclear nonproliferation.
No, but they're not saying that because they've got
right. This
moron as a president who is spouting all this hatred. Who can trust them?
That's the problem. And we continue to get reports out of the International Atomic Energy Agency from the UN of noncompliance with the inspectors or programs that are diverted to weapons that were previously not disclosed by Iran, which reduces the confidence internationally that Iran is going to be honest.
I mean, if I were running Iran right now, I'd go to Israel and say, look, we're going to become one of your greatest neighbors. You know, enough is enough. You know, we're going to put some money in here. We're going to get the Palestinians a homeland they deserve, and we're going to build it up, and we're going to put these kids, we're throwing rocks, we're going to get them jobs, and we're going to build this planet. But nobody's doing that, Jerry.
I know, and unfortunately, these, you know, going back to dictators like Hitler, who telegraphed all of his moves against the Jews when he wrote Mein Kampf, and no one believed them, when Ahmadinejad pushes these buttons again and says he wants Israel wiped off the map of the Middle East, it's going to produce fear in Israel.
Absolutely. Look, if somebody threatened me and came to me and said, look, I'm going to bomb your house, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, you got to take it seriously.
You have to take it seriously. And as long as Iran continues down this path of rhetoric, which is extreme and provocative, it's going to be very difficult to have any discussions that produce substantive change. The world would give Iran, Russia's offered to give Iran the uranium they need for peaceful purposes.
All right, Jerry Corsi, thanks for the updates. I'll be back in a moment with Dr. John Lermer. Let's go into the afterlife.